This required organization and leadership. Major political and social changes soon followed, as the Mississippian tradition appeared over much of the South and Southeast, named after the river. Regional Mississippian societies developed in river valleys and interacted constantly with one another. Their major centers lay in fertile river bottomlands with lakes and swamps. Some people lived in dispersed homesteads, others in compact villages, others in centers so large they could be called small towns. Thousands of farmers lived near major centers like Cahokia, on the Mississippi River near modern East St. Louis. Cahokia flourished in a rich floodplain known today as the American Bottom. The great mounds and plaza of its ceremonial precincts dominated the landscape for miles around. Monk's Mound, so-called, at the center of the town and the eastern end of the plaza, rises 102 feet above the floodplain and covers 16 acres. A thatched temple once stood on the summit. The entire Cahokia complex of mounds and plazas and temples and warehouses and homes of the elite covered more than 200 acres. The central precincts depicted the ancient cosmos of the ancient woodlands, divided into four segments and oriented towards the points of the compass. Cahokia lay near a strategic point near the Missouri and Mississippi confluence in a region where northern and southern trade routes met. The ruling families were adept traders who achieved enormous political and spiritual power in a few generations, probably as a result of their abilities at mediating between the spiritual and living worlds. The chiefs presided over a teeny territory by the standards of Maya or Sumerian standard civilization, politically volatile, based on religious beliefs, rooted in ancestor worship and the agricultural cycle. Cahokia's power and prosperity, like that of the Khmer states, depended entirely on the authority and charisma of a handful of rulers. Inevitably, it collapsed in about 1250, when other chiefdoms rose to prominence in the south and east. Another major center developed to the south, at Moundville, Alabama. But Mississippian society was never an integrated whole. It didn't cover the whole of the southeast. It was a mosaic of chiefdoms, large and small, ruled by leaders who lived somewhat aloof from their subjects. The Mississippian chiefdoms were past the height of their power when the first Spanish conquistadors reached the great river in the 16th century. Just like Southeast Asia, these were concertinas, chiefdoms that expanded and contracted according to the ability of their rulers, and of course, according to the ability of the rulers to communicate with other states on the outskirts in a country where the main communication was either by intervillage trail or by the river. Numerous chiefdoms still flourished in the south and southeast at European contact, but the Mississippian was past its greatness. But would these numerous kingdoms have ever achieved the elaboration of Mesoamerican or Andean civilization? Probably not. Most experts believe that the growing season for maize and beans in North America was too short to support the kind of intensive agriculture or high population densities of pre-industrial civilizations like those of highland and lowland Mesoamerica, described in the next two lectures. In this lecture, though, we've taken a look at the major chiefdoms of the Southwest and the eastern woodlands of North America. We described the indigenous roots of Pueblo society in the Southwest, visited Chaco Canyon and Mesa Verde, the two major ancestral Pueblo centers, and described the lowland Hohokam tradition. We concluded that these societies were theocracies. And from the Southwest, we traveled to the eastern woodlands, briefly described the mound builder cultures, Adeno and Hopo, and then described the rise of the Mississippian tradition with its great centers and elaborate chiefdoms, which were the apogee of North American chiefdoms. In the next lecture, we'll travel south to Central America and look at the culture of the Maya.